Here we have the center of Shenzhen, and I can say with certainty that it's the center because this intersection is the most important intersection. You see, it's only 600 meters away from the rice fields. You see that it's kind of surrounded by only two kinds of architecture, tall and low, nothing in between. You see that kind of some, even in the downtown, some of the remnants of the landscape are still there. There are kind of the fish ponds, and there's one billboard which celebrates the famous Deng, who said to get rich is glorious. And it's a billboard of the Chinese Communist Party, and it says with a kind of extreme intelligence, 100 years of no change. That's the motto of the Chinese Communist Party. Of course, they mean no change in the power of the Chinese Communist Party, and in order to have no change, of course, everything has to change in this direction. So that is just a visit to a new kind of urban condition, and there is another number of elements that I want to also deal with in terms of showing how our traditional assumptions and our traditional assessments of those elements has to change, I think, radically. After the urban condition, maybe the most radical change is the kind of issue of infrastructure. We all know that infrastructures are important, but this infrastructure I want to talk about is in a highway which is called Gordon Hu Highway, and already what is unique is that the highway has a name, and that the name is the name of its owner. So the highway is owned by one person. It's an 80-kilometer highway that connects Shenzhen to Guangzhou, and for which there is, of course, an extension project to extend it over the western half, and there is another completion project which we will discuss later, which is even more daring. Now, infrastructure used to be an answer of the modern mind in order to approve certain conditions that were no longer acceptable in terms of accelerating kind of certain flows, and in terms of conceived in terms of surgery, as somebody else in the introduction mentioned, surgery to bodies that need almost medical interventions. In other words, it was seen mostly in form of therapy and in the form of improving a condition. But that is no longer true. I think that infrastructure is turning into something that can be much better understood if it's seen as a pure prediction. Because the highway of Gordon Wu is a continuous viaduct. It doesn't touch the earth almost anywhere. It is privately owned. There is very little traffic on it, kind of frankly. It's hard to see what its necessity is, and clearly there is no necessity. Many of the trucks that are going from A to B are actually using secondary roads because it's much cheaper. And there is also, but what is unusual, it's a highway with many intersections, and if you go off the intersection, you don't necessarily find a place there. So it's a kind of a highway going through over the terrain with very little traffic, but with a kind of a huge system sort of on and off ramps that again can be much better understood, not in terms of responding to a need, but in terms of provoking a need, a future need or a future condition. So what Gordon Wu has planned and how he sees the highway is as something that will trigger cities. Somebody that will give a kind of spur and an inspiration to cities, and already at every high road, high intersection, there is a kind of planned city center, which is in certain cases already partly built, so that you get a kind of incredibly spectral, almost phantom-like condition. This highway hovering over the horizon, the little traffic, the incredibly intricate places where the intersection takes place. And this is kind of an image, a future shopping center underneath the highway with kind of future extensions, etc., all in the middle of nowhere without any apparent need. So that if China is devoted to the market economy, it's a kind of very speculative market economy for which It is unthinkable in the foreseeable future that there will be any of the elements that we traditionally associate with the market economy, such as profit or benefit. It's all kind of speculation in terms of a future condition, and in that sense, I think it is not impossible to speculate that the Chinese have simply adopted the incredible speculative energy of the communist system, which always explained the present and gave a kind of amnesty to the present in terms of its future ideal condition. You could say that China is now a communist market economy, which is also their term, where this same kind of sense of permanent deferral of the payoff, the deferral of the kind of profits or the ideal situation, is still incorporated in the whole logic. And it's very strange, of course, that you know, in our debate, we really take the market economy or the conversion of China so seriously, if it is very clear that there are also other elements. So architecture, again, you know, this is part of a billboard in such a ghost city. Here again, the ground has already been cleared for another kind of ghost city. It is there, but it's hard to say whether it ever will kind of again. The vocabulary of architecture is kind of now ruthlessly polarized, high and low, nothing in between, and it's never. It's not sure whether it will be produced for or have ever more reality than it has in this iteration. You see that on the way to realization, kind of cities are destroyed without any sentimentality, and actually you almost have a sense that there is a kind of sense of pleasure, because I've never seen cities destroyed with a kind of passion and in such tiny fragments as they're destroyed in China, as if seemingly kind of the nothing but dust satisfies the need to get rid of the past. And then the new situation is, of course, never more, much more real than images like this one, or images like this one, which are entirely kind of not only speculative kind of new cities, but ghost cities that are completely finished, including all their public spaces, including the balloon lamps, but for the moment not inhabited. And of course, the entire political system is very unstable, and in the condition where Hong Kong had freedom but very little space, and China had space and little freedom, of course, that was one thing, but now that Hong Kong has no freedom and therefore an incredible density, it is very likely that these kind of conditions become much more attractive to inhabit finally by the Hong Kong people, so that some kind of feeling, some kind of imminence of real occupancy is there. And of course, the entire political system is very unstable, and in the condition where Hong Kong had freedom but very little space, and China has space and little freedom, of course, that was one thing, but now that Hong Kong has no freedom and therefore an incredible density, it is very likely that these kind of conditions become much more attractive to inhabit finally by the Hong Kong people, so that some kind of feeling, some kind of imminence of real occupancy is there. So I've talked about the city, I've talked about infrastructure not as a service or not as a kind of therapeutic intervention, but more as a kind of prognosis. I now want to talk about what all these implications mean for the landscape, because what we clearly see is that the city is becoming a kind of more pervasive. We see that in this complex there is a growth of 500 square kilometers of city, but it's very important to realize that it's not massive city. It's kind of urban evidence, but in conditions that otherwise remain, let's say, primitive, or remain landscape, or remain agricultural. So it's not so much, and I think that is what is going on there and probably everywhere in the world in terms of being on the way to a situation where the whole opposition between city and countryside, you know, which has for so many centuries really occupies our whole dialectical abilities, that is becoming moot almost, and that what we are seeing is a kind of merger of the two, almost by the same kind of facility, with the same facility as the Photoshop program, that these two conditions are being merged more and more, kind of, rather than maintaining their own identity. So what you see in these other, in the, let's say, so far undeveloped areas, is preparations for development, the creation, the destruction of nature, and the creation of kind of flat fields of perfect flatness, almost the only Euclidean thing you can see in China, or almost Cartesian plains, where entire mountains are kind of chopped, or so that you can only see them in profile, and where complete apotheosis of the tabula rasa, all in terms of future urban development. without even projects, the act of creating the city, and maybe this is the city, it certainly is the future city, but a kind of process of urbanization in anticipation of elements which is literally kind of relentless and which is completely transforming the landscape, and which also gives a very urban quality to the landscape, or at least I think that this image clearly is not a kind of rural image, but is an image of urban, the urban activity of the kind of the four bearers or the kind of announcers of the city arriving by truck and turning it into future city. The last urban condition I want to talk about is the kind of city of Zhuhai, which is in a way, and that is because, of course, in this cluster of city, every city, almost like a Chinese form of city marketing, is involved in competition with every other city in order to establish its identity and in order to establish its attraction. We are now in the kind of southwestern part of the Pearl River Delta, and we come to a city called Zhuhai, which is in every sense the counterpart of Shenzhen, where Shenzhen is a kind of city that exploded and that is kind of completely filled with architecture. Zhuhai is so far a theoretical city which, in a kind of leap of faith, has designated itself as a garden city based on the hypothesis that kind of sooner or later, this kind of proliferation of the urban condition, the garden city will become a model that then has its own irresistibleness, its own attraction, its own seductiveness, because the rest will become too metropolitan. So without any necessity, this city is preparing itself for a destiny maybe in 20 years or in 30 years as a garden city to all the other ones. So as a kind of extreme form of city marketing. So flowers are everywhere, but inhabitants are nowhere. And you see that they try nevertheless to show the growth of Zhuhai kind of in every sense. But actually, it's a growth from zero to, I think, in 15 years, maybe 200,000 people. So the curve is the same, but the kind of reality is very different. And you see that also that the, you know, the iconography is a kind of a nicer iconography than the harshness of Shenzhen. So what this is a city that is completely provisional, that it depends on cardboard and kind of motel-like architecture to occupy its territory. Almost nothing there is taller than one story, and the stories are usually made of plasterboard. And the motels are not inhabited on a permanent basis, but the city is trying desperately to advertise itself as a vacation, holiday destination, conference destination, so that it doesn't even count on permanent inhabitants anymore, but it anticipates a permanently shifting human relations. Sorry. This is the plan of Zhuhai, incredibly ambitious, with huge infrastructural works. Deep water port, kind of bigger than Singapore, and a new airport there. And these are the planners and the mayor of Zhuhai, the mayor here. And what they have kind of come up with is very suggestive, that the city cannot be made anymore, but it can be kind of suggested. So what they've established a number of axes of future importance in the city. And instead of building the city, now these axes are being built. And that is kind of in our Harvard project, we have called this Potemkin corridor. Potemkin were the villages that were made to suggest more property kind of in Tsarist Russia. Here you could say that during the Gravely Forward, and this is an anecdote, the entire trajectory of Chairman Mao's travels through country would be transformed into linear zones of engineered perfection, where all the ambitions of the revolution would be magically realized. Those are kind of heartbreaking descriptions that Mao in his train was waving to peasants who were totally happy, who were having great harvests, while in the distance the chimneys bellowed out smoke for ironmongers. Well, kind of, and that was kind of realized overnight with a depth of maybe 400 meters on either side. And then on beyond that, there was devastation. In the same communist model, you could say that Potemkin metropolis corridors are being realized in Zhuhai to announce a future city. So one of the Potemkin corridors is the beach of Zhuhai, in the future, one of the great beaches of the 21st century. This is Lover's Lane, the longest Lover's Lane in the world, the 15 kilometers long, already fully equipped. These are some of the kind of most important axes of the city. Again, landscaped perfectly for future greatness. And maybe kind of some of the most kind of stunning extensions are that the city is planning is the kind of ultimate corridor, Potemkin corridor. Next. Which is this one? A bridge from Zhuhai to Hong Kong. And this is a kind of very subtle way, because of course, if they succeed in connecting this empty city to the full city, then of course its chances of future success are very real. And what is extremely ingenious in their kind of planning is that they're planning is a kind of one-way bridge, a bridge that kind of that facilitates the movement in one direction and makes it difficult in the other direction. And of course you could kind of just use toll so that you can go free from Hong Kong to Zhuhai, but that you have to pay from Zhuhai to Hong Kong. This one is kind of being built as a kind of really a final evidence of engagement. The first leap has been kind of made to a nearby island. Here you see one of the planners holding up the plan. But what is extremely interesting is that they have not decided yet where the bridge will end.